All right, good morning, everybody, welcome back. A little fewer numbers, assuming Rob will be here, but we'll go ahead and get started. Craig and Janice are at some AG training this morning, and I think everybody else is here that was here. Oh, Marilyn will be here shortly. So what I gave you, this new packet, this is the what was left over from yesterday's agenda, plus the remainder of what I wanted to talk about today, and all that sort of just budget related. So we'll just go right into that. So the first item there is just the monthly surcharge report. What's highlighted are the months, you know, where we had more in surcharge. So you can see April, June, and July of 2018, we were higher. May, for some reason, we were substantially higher in the May surcharge than we were compared to a year ago. I don't have any explanation for that. And then in July this year, we were just slightly under what we were last year. Year to date, closing out fiscal year 2019, we came in at $492,045.50 compared to $511,000 and some change last year. We'll get to the surcharge here in just a second. The non-lapsing carryover, this is the amount every year that for being fiscally conservative, managing well, you've had a sizable carryover in years past. I budgeted for $50,000. I thought I was being conservative, but we actually only came in at $32,231. So what's that, $18,000 less than what I budgeted for? So what I did then is there at tab 8, you can see where I made some changes to the FY20 proposed budget. I highlighted where I made the changes. The $32,000 is highlighted. I have deleted any funds for handouts, materials, swag of any kind. Deleted the funds for the travel calendars. I know that at the last council meeting we talked about it, that they're nice thank yous for speakers and support staff. If we do well, if we come under budget for, let's see, what do we have left? Fall, civil, OOMPA, and, that's it, fall, civil, OOMPA we have left. If we come under budget, then I will add some money back in for the travel calendars, if that's what the council thinks. I mean, that would be the first place I would put it back. But that's where I cut. I deleted any funds for UPC staff to go to our national seminar next summer. I haven't been in a year. I'm the director of the finance committee, so I need to go this winter, so I kept that in. But I deleted travel funds for next summer's conference. Council retreat, we had budgeted $1,750, but we're not going to spend nearly that much, so I doubt we'll even spend $1,000. The biggest expense is just going to be a hotel and travel costs. So I think we're going to come under around $1,000 there, and then the same for the council retreat. I budgeted that down to $1,000. And by doing that, our net income should be $1,012.33. So that would be my proposed FY20 budget. Any questions? I'll give you a minute to look at it. I know I just handed it to you. So,
where is the summer conference next year for NEPC? Do you remember?
I don't even remember. I don't remember. I know it's in lovely Little Rock, Arkansas this morning. And I'm hoping that we can still go. One of us can go. Well, Tyson and Marlise would have funds to go.
I was going to say, I could be a representative there. I can use my drink. I have been my grant budget to go 1 year.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, that'd be an option we appreciate.
But I don't attend all the meetings that you would attend.
Right.
Because I have my
ready out stuff. So. Yeah.
So just for general discussion, and we've heard it from two different jurisdictions now that on felonies, district court judges are not even imposing any fines at all.
Yes, actually, that's on the agenda.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, you're good. Is We are going to talk about that though, so.
Next summer NDAA is in Denver. I don't know if.
Oh, Denver, oh, okay. That's not as expensive, so we might be able to.
They're usually pretty coordinated most years, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, okay.
They didn't miss last year because NDAA was in Canada.
Yeah.
I know. That's why Sim went and I did not.
Okay, any questions on the budget?
Does this take into account the revenues received for Ron? It's probably not a lot.
Yeah, that's under, let's see, that is.
Don't you know?
Some of it is this PIMS thing because we still have some jurisdictions on PIMS and then, or is it the prosecutor?
Do you have a question? And I was interested in learning the code, still the budget.
Let's see, that's not. Oh, yeah, and then the prosecutor user fees. Okay, can we get a motion then on the amended budget?
Move to approve.
PBB, I'll second.
Okay, Will, Jan, as Marilyn gets caught up.
Motion, Will.
Second, Jan. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Then the tab B, that's just the comparison where we're at right now. It basically, it reflects the same numbers in that proposed budget. It's just this has the few expenses that we have incurred already this year. So if you want to know that for your information. All right, moving on to the surcharge. So as I reported last council meeting, I submitted, and Dan Burton helped, he was a big help. I submitted a request to the Office of Debt Collection and to the AOC asking for some very specific information regarding, you know, what they do with fines, like with the courts. I know by statute it says that they're supposed to close out their cases after, you know, 30 days, these statutory time periods. I wanted to know how much of the fines they're sending off, how much of the fines they're suspending, how much of the fines they're simply waiving. You know, just some other information along those lines to try to track and see, you know, how much either they're collecting through court and how much they're sending off to ODC. And then I sent a similar request to ODC asking how much, you know, what they get in referrals from the court versus how much they're collecting. So at tab C, you'll see you're going to need magnifying glasses, and I didn't have time when I just got this to print this out any larger. But the last two pages, this is what Office of Debt Collection sent me. And it, I haven't had time really to go through it to figure out exactly what it means, just so you can understand placement. What a placement is a referral from the court to the Office of Debt Collection. So that's, you know, what the amount that is placed with ODC to be collected. And then payments is what the debtors send into the OSDC to repay the debt. I just asked for 5 years worth of data from OAC and ODC, but I realized that when I got this, is that I'm not capturing an entire picture because, like, for example, the debts that they collected in 2015 don't represent, you know, just 2015 debts. I mean, it's debts that they've been collecting on for who knows how long. And so I don't know that I'm really going to get an accurate picture from ODC in terms of, you know, if the court sent $100,000 in 2015, do they collect $100,000, you know, in 2016? They just, they said that that's impossible to track, and the reality is that they don't, because some of these debts linger for years and years and years.
Does it also reflect the administrative fees?
No, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, what the administrative fees are. That's a good question to follow up on. I mean, what I specifically asked them for was the amount of debt that they write off. You know, if they determine that they can't collect from somebody, and that's not reflected anywhere in here, but verbally, what I was told is that they don't write off any debt, which, I mean, I guess I have to take them at their word for it. But at the same time, I can't.
They just have a huge accounts receivable.
Yeah.
That's what it's got.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe somebody who's a data analyst or something, you know, could look at this and make more sense of it than I can. I don't know that this really helps us, other than, you know, yes, they get this, they get the payment, the placement, they get the payment, and then they make the decisions as it comes in. So, like I said, I'm not sure what, if anything, this tells me, just, you know, what amount is coming in, then I guess compare that to what the AOC is sending. Now, the AOC, a month ago, they responded to my request, asked for some additional information. Last week, Dan Burton and I met, because we were gonna go over this, and I had to ping AOC again, because I hadn't heard from them. They emailed back, said that they've had some turnover in their office, and so one of the people that was working on this project has left, and so they asked for some additional time, so I still haven't heard back from the AOC. I'm hoping, they said maybe this week, once I find out, you know, I'll send something out and let the council know. And then, I guess what I'm asking for is guidance on what to do with that, how to interpret that information, which leads into, let's see.
Is there a way for them to break out restitution?
Restitution is completely separate.
So this is, restitution is not included in this.
Right, restitution is not in that. That's just debt. So I'm not sure then, you know, how to, well, it goes into the next one, is what solutions do we take to the legislature? I mean, I don't know what, I can imagine what I'm gonna get from the AOC, that they're, you know, they send all of this debt to, or all of these fines to the state office of debt collection that's really not being collected on. How do we approach the legislature with that? Quick, tell them to not send fines off. As Steve pointed out, and that's one of the things on here, is that district courts are now training that judges not to impose fine for indigent defendants. And I don't know that
they... I don't even think it's just indigent defendants. I've heard that they're just not imposing fines at all.
Okay, I thought it was just indigent.
No,
I've,
for us it's been indigent defendants. With several judges, but that's misdemeanors too. So
yeah.
It's across the board that they're not. But the three judges that we've been seeing that most from is from, they're
yeah.
saying you can't afford an attorney, so you can't afford a fine.
Fox Elder County was, if you are in district court, you do not get a fine.
Yeah.
Like that has become their judges.
So
it doesn't matter the case, doesn't matter anything.
We max out fines for drug trafficking
mm-hmm.
that gets stopped here in the county that are interstate. We don't want to keep them on probation or anything, incarcerate them for a period, max out their fine and let them go. But other than that, our district court judges just are not really imposing fines.
So I think that's where we go. I mean, the ALC would have to have the records of fines imposed at
right,
least.
Right.
And I think that's the better figure to take to the legislature. Say, because of JRI, as a response to JRI, this is what the district courts are doing, and the surcharge is the direct result. So
yeah. Well, and that's what I was hoping. I see a more valuable source of information coming from AOC for that very reason. And so that's why I wanted to go 5 years back. Maybe I should have gone longer, is to see, you know, pre-JRI, what were courts imposing, you know, on an annual basis in terms of fines, how much were they collecting, you know, whereas now, how much are they imposing in fines?
But if these are, is this fiscal year or calendar year?
Fiscal year.
I think it's fiscal year.
Fiscal year?
Yeah.
So fiscal year 2015 was the year before JRI.
Okay.
Because it was the fall of 15.
Oh, that's right.
That
that's right. It's been around that long.
So if you look at this chart on the left,
at the bottom. I think this does provide helpful information. And what you see is that it says the amount that's been sent to OSDC is doubled between 15 and 19. And that's account sent to state debt. So that's new cases. This shows that the justice courts especially, but also the district courts to some extent, are not successfully collecting as much as they used to, and they're just shrugging off instead of just state debt, which will tell you, because I've been in the meetings, they have a 2% collection rate.
Yeah.
So they also actively went out and tried to solicit from the justice courts, though, saying, we want to collect.
And the statute was modified to specifically say if they haven't paid by this amount of time, it has to go to state debt. But that was at the request of Judge McCullough from
So, I mean, is that one solution? Is that we ask that they change the statute, that they can't send it off quite so soon, that they keep it for a period of time?
I think courts are better at collecting than state debt.
Oh, I agree.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think that's a losing argument for the legislature.
To keep it with the court?
Might be easier to support Post and what they're asking for and hope that we get that percentage that they were giving.
Well, okay, and so Jen's getting ahead, which is fine, is when I talked to Director Stevenson last week, he said that Post is going to try and get their entire budget from dedicated funds, which would free up 18.5% of the surcharge. Now, whether
yeah, that's
they,
a bigger share of a dying well, though.
Well, right, right.
Yeah, just a band-aid for now.
Yeah.
Unless we jump on with them and say we want to be funded as well.
Yes. So, I mean, I'm just going to write all these down to increase the amount of time that the case is left open, or is that what it is?
No, the fines stay with the court.
Fines stay, yeah.
Yeah. Let's call it pay to play, and then they can...
I was trying to find it, and I can't on my phone right now, but I think the sentencing guidelines talk about what courts should do with fines.
Yeah.
And because they're open for public comment now, this would be a good time to... critique whatever is already, even if it's not being amended this year.
I mean, it's amazing what's happening with this philosophy, because back to the youth courts can charge a $50 fee for the kids to go through it, and this new group that has come from CCJJ saying, why are you guys even doing this? Why are you requiring restitution for these youth, and we want to teach them responsibility? And so there's just this wave, this philosophical wave of why are you dinging them with money? Well, it seems to be kind of like the standard exchange, and you're trying to keep it for, I don't know, it is strange.
What other arguments do we take? I mean, is going to the legislature and just say, look what's happening as a result of non-payment of fines, or not even imposing fines, is all of these agencies' budgets are dwindling.
You could raise the macro issue and say, all right, you've decided that defendants shouldn't pay for the justice system.
Yeah.
Fine. Who will?
Yeah, that's the bottom line. So what are the other entities that are relying on the surcharge? Are they, you know what they're doing?
Post in particular, because they get the largest percentage, what they were able to do is to tap into the uninsured motorist fund, and so they're getting $500,000 from that fund to supplement the loss that they've taken from the surcharge. The others, I haven't actually spoken with them other than when I sent the email saying, can I include you in this request, you know, saying represent to AOC-OBC that I'm writing on behalf of everyone. And they said yes, and we emailed, the response I got was just, yeah, we're facing the same situation where we're continuing to lose money and having to cut programs and different things.
Yeah, if the surcharge were predictable, I mean, if it at least would level out, so it could be predictable, but if, as we've got this trend across the state as far as...
Well, as Rob indicated, I don't see that trend being reversed by the legislature.
Uh-huh.
So to that extent, it is predictable.
What other sources of funding do we
have?
How
about why, yeah.
I mean, what are the other possibilities?
Yeah, I think.
Well, the one thing that I know that legislators, especially people who claim to be fiscally conservative like we claim to be here in Utah, understand and care about is money, right? And so if people actually go and make them aware that to continue running all these agencies that you have created via statute and have funded via the surcharge, because of your decisions, it's now going to cost you X money in dedicated funding, then maybe it does cause them to say, oh, maybe we did go the wrong way on fines.
Because they're not going to want to open that program.
Or, yeah.
Well, right.
There is that.
So I would really want those AOC figures, because we've got a meeting with the president of the Senate and then Jerry Stevenson, who's over the money, and showing what it is.
Yeah, when do you have that meeting?
It's probably not till, we need to move it up. I don't even think it's till December, but I would like to move it up to early November.
Okay, because one of the things I'm hearing, you know, is how soon can we get a meeting? And I put Hutchings just because that's it, but it's with Jerry Stevens and who else?
And Stuart Adams.
Okay. Is
and Hutchings would be good to meet with as well, because he's one
who?
Of the co-chairs. Hutchings?
Yeah.
And he's one of the co-chairs of criminal justice.
Now, I think about it, the Speaker of the House will be at that meeting too. Wilson will be there too.
So, yes, I will have the AOC numbers. I mean, like I said, they told me last week that they apologize, that they'll try to get it to me this week, even if it's not until next week. If you were able to, or we were able to get a meeting bumped up to October, November, I know I would have numbers by then.
So we have an annual meeting with them, and so I want to move it up earlier for the CBA.
I mean, obviously, this is not a normal item on your agenda. Are you okay with us piggybacking on your meeting?
It might just have to be me with the way that they set it up, but I mean, I don't know, we'll see.
Well, and that was going to be my question is when we set up these meetings, whether it's with Hutchings or this other group, who should go? Is it just you, Steve?
Well, this isn't. This is basically we host. All the people that represent, and we just happen to have those three people along with a whole bunch of others that happen to be part of Layton.
Okay.
And
okay.
So, but we don't solely address Layton issues. We try to make it a little bit more global.
Okay.
This is something that they know. We told them what's been happening, at least in Layton with JRI,
mm-hmm.
and from across the state, I've given them some information, but I think this is huge. I mean, you know, Will says it exactly right. We've always considered this to be kind of a user fee.
Yeah.
You know, taking advantage of the criminals doing this, and now who's gonna pay for it? Now the victims are gonna get nailed twice.
Right. Okay, so then if we want to do a separate meeting with Hutchings, who should attend that? Probably me.
Yeah.
You, maybe the chair.
Yeah, Stephen.
So we need to make sure the I'm not sure how you requested the numbers from the courts, from the AOC.
Yeah.
But we need to clarify whether they're, because they're going to tell you how much they've collected.
Mm-hmm.
We better make sure they're telling you the numbers they've collected. And does that include the amount they're receiving back from the debt collection service?
Oh,
or
right,
not.
Right.
Because you don't want to double count that money.
Yeah, I think why even bigger numbers?
I'm sure their number's going to include the amount they're receiving back from them. They just receive those in checks.
I think the bigger number's going to be the reduction in fines order.
See, that's what I want to see is.
That's going to be the huge number, I think.
You know, if they impose a $1,000 fine and they're suspending 600 of that, do they then write off 200? And let you do community service.
Well, it sounds like the felonies, they're saying, you know,
$5,000
all of it's suspended.
Yeah.
So
they don't
if they even do that, they may not, they do that with the prison or the jail time. They don't.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So where they're not imposing fines, yeah. Do they just say we're not imposing any fines?
It's not one of the terms and conditions of probation.
Yeah. Nothing suspended. There's just no
fine. There's no fine afforded ever.
Wow.
So it'll be interesting then to see. I should ask how many cases are not where fines are not being imposed.
That would be a good question.
Yeah.
So we can show that this is the number, but that's just this small percentage of cases.
And it's likely by judge.
Yeah.
Like I can think of three right now who are not doing fines, but then I have three others that are.
Wow. So here's your equitable and consistent justice, right?
Well, my judge is, it's case by case. Sometimes he says, I don't think you need a fine. Sometimes he says, I'm going to impose a fine. I mean, one single judge.
So more and more, I mean, the system is being supported by traffic fines.
And trafficking?
I knew what you meant, but I also knew, like, okay. Okay. So we talked a little bit about, you know, Jan brought up posts going after dedicated funds. I mean, is that something that we should rally around and support and then say, okay, so we want, you know, a portion of these funds? I mean, what I can see is the rest of us that receive surcharge funds and or agencies that would like to receive surcharge funds, you know, start churning in the water.
What's the end goal with this, collecting this information and going to the legislature with it?
Well, it's to show them, okay, where are the gaps in funding? How is it, you know, where has it dried up?
In support of our request for dedicated funding?
I think that's probably got to be our end goal.
I think
this
is reversed.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, is what I want to talk about or come up with a list is what are the valid solutions that we take to the legislature to try to, you know, stop the hemorrhaging for all of these agencies? Is it dedicated funding? Is it getting a change? The courts have to increase the amount of time that a fine is left with the court, since they're better fine collectors.
You know, Rob says that's a losing argument with the legislature. That's going to be a losing argument with the judges and the court, too. They're nuts, too.
Well, but that's why I want to say, look, okay, you send $1 million to ODC, and they're collecting 2%. And so look at this huge, you know, this revenue, the surcharge revenue that is lost. But if you would just keep it with the courts for 3 months, 6 months, you know.
Just leave it at the discretion of the courts. Right now the statute specifically mandates that after a certain number of days they have to send it to state.
But don't you think though the judges want to clear it off their calendar? They don't want to be debt collectors.
No, they do.
Well, they're better at it. I'm sorry.
Well, they are.
The justice courts are usually pretty good, and that's where the money are coming from.
Yeah.
Because they know that if they're not collecting on fines, then they're not funding their own operation.
My justice court judge is not happy about having to send them.
Yeah.
If you don't get paid within 90 days, it's gone. No matter what.
See, I think that the AOC should have to fund our budget from what we're losing.
They're starting to do that.
I mean, are there other...
But if they're following the guidelines...
I know, right.
Well, every argument that Post is going to make, if they push this year, those are our arguments. So if we can just kind of draft them through the maze and support them, and hopefully they'll support us, because we're a much smaller operation than Post,
Right.
I think what we don't want this to be is a message to the legislature again saying, oh, we hate JRI. Because on that side of it, our message has to be, we're doing our best to comply with JRI, and we're going to see what happens.
Right.
And so if we're saying, oh, the courts aren't collecting enough fines, they're not imposing enough fines, that sounds like we're being the whiny babies saying that we need to do more fines. And I don't think we should do that.
No, I agree, man. But we got to report what's happened.
Sure.
This is what's happened as a result of this.
Yeah. Ironically, we might get more leverage talking about what UPC's mission is in the context of their concern that prosecutors are underfiling, overcharging, saying it's important that they get this training, our funding is disappearing.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's you know, one of the bullet points here is just for us, just UPC. So what are the impacts on us with the loss in surcharge fund? So the first one is
don't leave with the swag.
What's that?
Don't leave with the swag. Swag
is not on there anywhere. No. So, you know, we don't have a law clerk. And we haven't done a case update. You know how we used to do that every month, send out a newsletter. We just don't have the resources to do that. We don't have the ability to hold these specific skills training like we talked about yesterday. Now, granted, as a staff, we'll go forward and look at, you know, maybe in the future, fall and spring, where it's the lecture series, we can webinar it to a small group and send it out, and that would save us some money. But does that decrease the effectiveness with our training?
Can I comment on that?
Yeah.
Take a minute on that. So I will admit yesterday I was very discouraged by that conversation. We're taking things that we do very well We're taking the largest gathering of prosecutors in the state of Utah every year and saying we should reduce it to a webinar series. That should be a sense of pride for this group, I would think, that we are gathering 300 plus prosecutors every year to come